This podcast is for you if you want to learn about the wonderful and wacky world of the English language and the people who speak it. If you want to learn English, speak English, and understand different speakers of English, then you're in the right place and you're going to love our podcast episode today. Welcome to English World with Chris and Mary Kos. We are a team of language lovers, expert teachers, and native speakers who are on a mission to help people around the world speak English and show the world their true value. We correct mistakes, practice pronunciation, and explore grammar rules while drinking coffee and having fun. So get comfortable, relax, grab a pen and paper, and welcome to the show. Today's episode is brought to you by English Every Day, an unlimited speaking practice program where you can join live speaking practice lessons with professional native teachers 5 times every day. There are a lot of courses on the internet and a lot of useful videos too, but the one thing that is missing for most English learners is practice. And if you need speaking practice, then English Every Day is for you. So click the link in the description or go to chrisamerikos.com to learn more today. Camille, welcome so much, and thank you so much for taking the time to do this with me today. We just talked a little bit before we started, so I know you're in Portugal now, but I was hoping to kind of start off today, if you could just tell us your story, like where you started, how you got into all of this, you know?
Sure. So I started creating content in 2020 with the pandemic. I was born in the northern part of Michigan, in the UP, and when I was 17, right after high school, I moved to South Carolina, and I got married young. That's where I met my husband, and we traveled a lot together. And jumping forward to when I turned, I think I was 27, I started learning Spanish, which was my first foreign language, and I didn't like love language learning at the time, but I kept learning languages over the years, and then I started to really love it. So a real passion of mine is language learning. And because of my passion for that, I started teaching English online. So I started on YouTube, but it's never been a platform that's really taken off for me. I feel like my biggest platforms are, well, Instagram is the number one.
Oh, yeah.
And yes. And so I just kept going and trying to discover, like, what is my style? What value can I add to people's lives? And I found out that I really love real life English. So teaching, I use my kids a lot in my videos. They're a part of it. And it's just a lot of fun. Like, I just love receiving messages saying, you're helping me so much with my English. It's very rewarding. And as a language learner myself, I have compassion for my students that I know what people are going through. And I know it's hard. It's hard to learn a language.
So you started teaching online. Have you ever taught offline?
No, I've always done everything online. Okay. Yeah, I don't even do like one-on-one classes or anything like that. In the past, I've done some group classes and one-on-one, but what I started doing was writing books. So I've written 6 books. Actually, I have my books here. I've written a lot of books, short stories, dialogues, things like that. And I have a lot of fun creating that kind of content. It feels easy. Like, it's a lot of work. But since I enjoy it so much, it's not hard work.
Yeah. And are you self-publishing now?
Or yes. Yeah. So we self-publish like through Amazon. Yes. And then you can also get them on Kindle, I think Apple. And then I also sell my PDFs too on my website.
Awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So the books are on different topics. I saw a book that I wanted to ask you about later, but we'll do it now, about traveling, short stories about travel.
And yes.
I wanted to ask you, like, what was your inspiration to write that? Because most English teachers don't write that book. They write, I saw something about verbs there.
In the stack, I have like one Englishy book. Yeah.
So how did you get to the short stories about travel for English learners?
Yeah, so I love to travel, and I wrote that book while traveling. So I've been to 45 countries with my family. I have 3 kids, and they're 5, 7, and 10, and the 5-year-old. So together, we've been to 15 countries. So we've traveled a lot. And I thought, like, what better way to learn English through real content? So all the travel stories are real and they're from my life. And I was like, it's so much fun to learn with content, real content. And so that inspired me to write the little stories and teach from those stories.
That's really cool. I'm gonna have to put you in touch with my wife after this because when we travel, it was our first time with two traveling to Portugal a few months ago, and I think it scared us away from trying it in the near future.
How old are your kids?
6 months and four.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I swear we've been traveling since I am, have been pregnant with all of the kids. So I think they're conditioned now. They become really good travelers. But yeah, I would say three and under, it's tough, especially long flights and all of that. But keep doing it, keep trying.
Yeah. I mean, the experience of the child also being in a new country, and
Yeah.
they don't get that on a day-to-day basis usually,
Yeah,
because
totally.
they go outside, they're in one environment, and everything is the same. And so, their model of the world, how they construct reality, it is only like this. And you can tell them, oh, some people speak different languages or whatever, but they don't really connect the dots. And then when they
Yeah.
find themselves in the situation, it's like, oh, wow, the whole world changed. And now I'm different because I don't speak how everyone else speaks. And to be in that situation, I
Yes.
think it's very useful.
Yeah. I think our kids' experience has really shaped them and will shape them for the rest of their lives. I feel like their minds have become so open. Like their favorite foods are not the typical American foods, you know. They love Indian food. My other son loves sushi. Like it's cool. It's like you're pretty cultured kids. I love that.
Yeah, that's great. And not everyone gets that experience.
It's true.
I grew up as a military brat, so I was like
Okay.
moving around all the time, and no one in my immediate family spoke any foreign languages, so it was all English. But I moved from like the Ohio over to Hawaii, then Italy, then Rhode Island, and then West Virginia. And so, like,
Wow.
while you're growing up, you try to fit in naturally. You're gonna like you want to be part of the group. So every place I went, I kind of changed how I talked.
Yeah.
And so the result was, as an adult, it's this like weird mix of like, if I get really relaxed, I'll go into like a New England kind of thing, and if I'm with my family, then it'll sound a little more southern, like more Midwestern, like Ohio.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's funny because sometimes everywhere I go, people will kind of be like, oh, where, like, you sound American, but where are you from? And if you're in New York, then people will be like, oh, are you from Boston? If you go to
Yeah.
Boston, they'll be like, you're from New York. And
Yeah.
go to
Yeah.
Florida and they'll be like, what's Boston?
Yeah, so true. So many different accents. I'm curious, did you learn a foreign language?
This is connected to the story too. Like, I was born in Germany. My dad was
Okay.
serving there when I was born, and I don't speak German. I don't know any German or anything, but I was born there. So
Yeah.
when I came back as a kid, everyone told me at school and other,
Yeah.
you're German. Because the teacher would say, well, where are you born, or where are you from, or
Yeah.
they would ask these simple questions, and I was the one who was born in Germany. So everyone would say, you're German. And then this kept happening to me, because then we moved back to, like, when we moved to Hawaii from Ohio, people were like, oh, you're that Howley, that white guy. And
yeah.
then I moved to Italy and went to an American military high school there, and they're like, oh, that's the Hawaiian guy.
Oh,
I
yes.
come back to the States and they're like, oh, that's the Italian guy.
You're like, who am I?
Right? So I feel like, you've moved around a lot, you've traveled a lot, but you've also kind of
Yes.
moved to different parts of the States too. So you've got that,
Yes.
you've been around lots of accents. Tell me about that. I saw the video with your dad,
Yes.
and that was really cool to highlight that. So tell me more about your experience with accents.
So, yeah, I was born in the UP, so the accent up there is pretty strong. And then moving down to the South, at first, it was a little bit of culture shock just going to the South from the tiny town in northern USA. And so having to get used to that accent, but I never picked up on a Southern accent. I feel like I have a pretty neutral accent now. And I think because I have helped people learn English for so long that I naturally somehow slowed down my speed. I think I speak slower than I used to speak, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's hard as an English teacher because you get the teacher voice and then
Yes.
you try to balance it with like what's natural but what's comprehensible.
Exactly. Yeah. So those are the only. Oh, and then I lived in Hawaii too for 4 years, actually.
Oh, cool. Where?
Yeah, Kona, the Big Island.
Okay, I was on Oahu over on
Okay.
in like Waianae area.
Nice, nice. Hawaii's beautiful.
Yeah, I really like it. I went to
Yeah.
the Big Island once to go like walk in Kilauea in the crater.
Oh, nice. Very cool. Yeah. And
Nice.
then as far as other places in the US, I haven't lived. I've been overseas, though, a lot. We spent 2 years living in Spain. Now we're in Portugal. And then just a lot of like 3 month trips in different countries. And so I feel like I have heard English in so many different accents because I'm teaching it and because I'm interacting with people. So everybody has a unique accent when they speak English, myself included, you know, and I think it's what makes, I don't know, it's beautiful. I love accents. I think they're really cool.
That's another interesting thing too, is like for you as an American English speaker, and I wanted to talk about that too, because choosing American English, that's your thing, right? You're
Yeah.
teaching American English.
American English,
So
yes.
why did you choose that instead of like general English overall?
Because it's my accent, it's American English. Yeah, I think that would be the biggest reason. Like, there's not a huge depth to it. Yeah. And I think a lot of people, when they hear, a lot of people say like they like American English, they know American English because of films, because of series that they watch and things like that. So I thought maybe it'd be more attractive to say American English. And I think when people think of English, they usually just think of British English or American English, even though it's spoken in different countries like Australia, New Zealand, and I'm probably forgetting some. But generally, those are the two biggest ones. Should I learn American or British? And I do not have a British accent. I cannot teach British English. Yeah.
It's interesting because I noticed this kind of when I tried to talk to I noticed this when I started hiring American English teachers to come over when we had a school in Russia. So I was living in Russia. We set up an offline school there, and then we bring over native speakers from different places. And so a lot of times I would it was like we were speaking a completely different language when we were doing training and information about English as a foreign language. When I would speak to some of the American English teachers, and I came to realize that like the system in the United States is made for teaching people who are in the United States English, and that's like a whole different niche, whole different branch of English as a foreign language compared to like the global English that's being taught at like if you're in China and you go to a language center in China, then the process, the whole everything is going to be completely different than if you went to like a language school in the state, you know?
Wow, that's so fascinating.
And yeah, so it's really cool that American English is this very special niche. And so like we can look at it from these two different perspectives, right? Like the internal, like from the American point of view, how do we teach this and how do we do this? And then it's like
Yeah.
from the global point of view, how does American English fit in?
Totally, totally. You can have the both of those perspectives. So from your experience, did you prefer a certain way? Like, did you prefer how it was the system in the States, or did you prefer Russia? Or what are your thoughts?
I found that the international way, I'm going to call it the international way, it's
Yeah, better.
more British English leaning,
Yes,
but
100%.
international, because then when we get into British English, then they have like all their exams and things that they like, it gets into its own like localization, right?
Yes.
But like, I found just the international one was the one that I was brought up in as a teacher. And so that's just what I'm accustomed to. I just think it's different. I don't think one's better versus it's
Yeah.
different.
Okay.
And I do think that's really important that we have those because the context of the learning environment, right? I'm teaching you English in Russia, and we speak English, practice English for an hour, and then you go outside and you never hear English for 7 days. That's a lot different than if you just heard everybody speaking English before you came into my classroom. We
Yeah.
went for an hour talking about things that are really applicable in your life right now in your environment, and then you leave and go back into the same environment. So it's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
You have to do a lot more culture work, like mindset and culture work with international people, I think, because if they're already
Yeah.
in the States, like reality already had to switch for them to
Yes.
arrive there.
Yeah, you know something so interesting. I teach from my life a lot, and so I just teach like how I would do things with my kids, and I realized I started noticing because I have such a global audience and people from all over the world that the comments wouldn't be about English, they would be about the way that I do things with my kids. And I was like, "Whoa, this is so interesting." Like, it didn't even cross my mind to do it another way, but everyone does it different from me, and that's fine. We're like learning from each other. But like you said, I feel like my lessons sometimes are a cultural lesson, even though I mean, I guess they're meant to be that too. But now that I recognize that, but before I was like, wait, what's going on? Why are you guys just talking about the way I help my son brush his teeth or, you know what I mean? But it's because their cultural view is different. So they're not only learning American English, they're learning the culture as well through my real life videos.
And that's so cool that you get to be this, you know, conduit, this
Yeah.
pathway to for them to not only learn the language, but to also learn the culture. And so there are some people, there are some creators or teachers who do that, and some who do it. I say more or less, right? I think it's important though.
Yeah, it adds a whole other dynamic to teaching.
Right. I think when I was doing the teacher training thing back in like 2009, they called it realia. Reality,
Okay.
like using real objects, real things.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And then, I mean, if you've done like teacher psychology classes or something, they usually talk about this. Like, but yeah, so, the American English, niche of English, it's really interesting. And now that you're in Portugal and you speak lots of languages and have studied lots of languages, you know, I'm sure that you have like it's always interesting to look back at how you used to speak, because now you have the filter, right? Now you know the rules, you know what how languages work, like
Some languages.
like a
I'm
linguistic
trying.
filter, like
Yeah,
a
totally. I know what you're saying. Yeah.
so how do you think that's like your increased knowledge of linguistics or overall has kind of influenced your own
Oh, that's
speech
a good
production?
question. Yeah. Okay. I'm trying to think of how I could even talk about it.
I guess at the beginning we kind of touched on it, right? When you were like, I feel like I speak slower, right?
Oh,
Is that
yeah. I feel like I speak slower for sure. I don't think I think I still use connected speech a lot and things like that because I don't want to sound robotic, you know? But I recognize that as a language learner, hearing people speak slowly, especially in the beginner to intermediate phase is so key for language development. Like, if we only listen to people speaking fast, we're going to be discouraged and we're going to feel like we cannot get there. And so I think that encourages me to keep creating content that is more for that beginner to intermediate stage, because we can find advanced content everywhere. It's just real life English. It's whatever you're interested in. You can Google videos and find that and find people speaking fast. But to find people meeting you where you're at and where you feel like, hey, I understand them. I'm like happy. I think it's a good thing. And when I'm learning Turkish now, and it's been a year and a half, and I can have conversations, basic conversations, but there's still so much I don't understand. And when I watch a video and they're speaking slowly and I understand, it motivates me to keep learning. You know, I'm like, okay, I can learn this language. It's going to take a while, but I can do it. So, as far as language speed, that's something that I've definitely learned, I would say. And then, man, no, I don't know if I have like much more thoughts. I don't know if I've changed a whole lot else. I have more compassion for people like that are learning. I'm not like judging their accents or like rude to them, or I just have a lot of grace for people and compassion for language learners because I'm one myself.
Yeah. So we're going to kind of go into like kind of a darker topic. Just fair warning, okay?
Okay, drink
Oh,
some water.
yeah, get ready. So how would you feel if someone told you that your English is incorrect because of your accent?
I mean, it wouldn't make me feel good. You know, I wouldn't feel good about it. I would be like, well, that's hard. It's hard to say that to somebody. I think because there are different ways of speaking, there's different accents, there's different vocabulary we use. And if you're speaking grammatically, if somebody's like, yeah, Camille, you're grammatically incorrect, I'd be like, because sometimes I am, be like, you're right. You're right. I said that incorrectly grammatically, you know. I get people that call me out and they're like, the other day I said, oh, like in a video, kids, watch out. There is a lot of cars. Like there, instead of there are a lot of cars. And then I was like, I always say is. Natives say is a lot. You know? So I think it's like humbling as a teacher to be like, yeah, I do get things wrong. I'm not always grammatically correct, you
This is a
know?
great example that you just brought up, Camille, because there is a lot of cars. There are a lot of cars. Like, so if a person, if you're with a student and they tell you there is a lot of cars, if they say that, are you going to tell them that's a mistake?
No, I it would sound totally normal because that's what I say.
It goes against the rule, right?
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah.
But that and then we can get into that, like if it really does or but now let's say that you were teaching and you said it in a video. You didn't catch it when you were recording or writing the script. You didn't catch it when you were editing, because like you said, it's just so normal. And you put it out.
I didn't catch it when I was editing. I didn't even notice.
So let's say you put that out there and now somebody else takes that video and makes a video of their own on YouTube and says, this person's not a real teacher. See, they made this mistake.
I would feel bad. I would feel like, oh man, I would be able to own my mistake because I do. And I tell people, I don't teach perfect English. I teach real life English. Like I don't actually script my things. Like I write a little outline, but then I just speak what I would naturally say, like when I'm with my kids or things. I'm not like word for word planning it out. I'm like, I want it to be real life, you know? So I don't script it. But yeah, my feelings would be hurt. I'd be like, oh.
Yeah, it seems
Maybe it's
crazy.
out there. Maybe somebody made that video already.
Well, they after we talked about it, now somebody
Somebody's gonna make it.
they might do it.
Oh.
That stuff happens, but that's YouTube. So yeah, kind of, I guess that was a segue into how do you feel about the community of English teachers on YouTube and creators on YouTube. Do you feel like this is a positive space or negative space for learning, for teaching?
Yeah. To be honest, I feel like my community is more on Instagram. I don't really like all the people that have YouTube channels. I would know them from Instagram. And then they decided to go there. So I don't feel like I have a real big community on YouTube, though I'm trying to grow my channel. I'm sharing good content. I just started again because I took some time off of sharing longer form. But for the past few months, I've been consistent with it. And I'm hoping to grow on YouTube as well and meet more teachers on YouTube as well. So I don't know if you want me to comment from Instagram, if this is for YouTube.
About Instagram. Let's talk about Instagram.
Okay. Yeah. I love the community of teachers that I know on Instagram. Yeah. I feel like they're supportive. I feel like I've done collaborations with them. I'll message people that have way more following than me and they'll be like, yes, let's collaborate. Let's do a live. And I feel like we have a lot of fun. So I feel like it's a safe place for sure.
And do you feel like from the learner's perspective, right? This is like for me as a learner, as a language learner, I honestly would prefer to watch a YouTube video than to watch short form on Instagram.
I do the same. I spend hours on YouTube on watching Turkish videos right now. Yeah.
So how do you reach learners on Instagram with short form then?
Yeah, I think by bringing in like your personality, like who you are, you know? And then I go live with my followers every week. And so people will watch my live sessions. And I feel like that is a way that you can connect with them.
That's awesome. And then you can have your collabs right there.
Yeah, exactly. I actually open up to like speaking times with students. So I meet students from all over the world and they can practice their speaking live with me. And I think it makes like them more real to me. They're not just a number. And then I'm more real to them. Like I'm a person, you know?
I think it's a really good strategy. I used to do that a lot on Facebook and YouTube when we were getting that momentum going. Good. It's good.
Yeah.
But I checked out your website before our call and it looks like you must have done PR or marketing or something before this with your press
everything. It's my husband. He does everything.
Okay.
So that's like our weak point as marketing. We don't really know how to market. And it's like the most important thing for a business. My husband's gotten better at it since helping me, but like all my books, he designs the covers, he self-publishes them. And then he does all the stuff. He's the one that's like, Camille, did you see this message from Chris? Like, I think it'd be a good opportunity to go on his podcast. So I'm like, okay. Nice. So we both showed up not really
knowing like other people organized.
I messaged your secretary or your girl back. I did it, but my husband was the one who was like encouraging me because I do get a lot of messages about podcasts and I don't always have the maybe desire to go on or things like that. So
yeah, gotta be vetted a little bit first. We'll talk about the marketing after the call.
Okay.
Are there any topics that you really wanted to cover or areas that you would like people to kind of recognize your expertise in?
I think I talked a lot about the real life stuff, the real life content that I create and things like that. Mm-hmm. If you want to talk about tips for language learning, since I've learned like 5 foreign languages, I have a lot of tips and ways and strategies and things like that, if you're interested in that.
Yeah. I know that you've studied a lot of languages. Right now you're on Turkish. Actually, are you studying on a website or a platform or somewhere? Or is it just
YouTube, mostly YouTube. I study mostly on my own and then I try to meet natives and ones that will correct me. And then that's kind of the way that I learn.
I have somebody to introduce you to after this.
Nice.
But the languages that you've studied before, they're all Romance languages.
Yes, right? Exactly.
So take us through them. And I mean, maybe there was some commonality in learning them that you can share with us that's going to be maybe a helpful tip.
Yes. Yeah. So Spanish was the first one I learned. I went to Mexico and we did it in a formal way with the teacher. And took, I think, like 9 weeks of classes, 4 hours a day. And then we lived with a Spanish-speaking family. So
That's awesome.
by the end of the few months, we were speaking broken Spanish. And then we moved over to Spain and lived there for 2 years. And really, I think that helped to get our Spanish in a good place. And then when we were living in Hawaii, we were watching a lot of Netflix at night. We had two kids, and we're like, we're kind of wasting time. And we decided to learn a new language. And my husband chose Portuguese, and I chose Italian because I was like, this seems beautiful. And I studied it using Pimsleur and just finding all the resources I could. This was back in 2017. And I studied it for 3 months, and then I stopped for nine. I had another baby and I was like, it was too much. And then I went back to it when we decided to go to Italy, and I studied pretty religiously for another year and a half. And so I got to a good level in Italian. Having Spanish already helped me to learn Italian. Yeah. And then while traveling, because we would take these 8 month trips around the world with our kids, we'd be gone for 8 months. Just then, usually we'd burn out and go home. So during one of those trips, I decided to learn Portuguese, and I decided to not study grammar. I was like, I already have Spanish and Italian. Can I learn this language without grammar? And so I pretty much just went into watching content and speaking to Brazilians. And I studied 1 year, and I got to a really good level in Portuguese. And then I was like, okay, it's time for French, like the last big one of the Romance languages. And I struggled. I thought because I have three Romance languages, French will be easier. Because I knew kind of the process of language learning, like it was easier in that sense, but I studied for 2 years, and I would say it's still like the weakest of the four. It's hard. French is just hard. Est-ce que tu parles aussi le français? Pas du tout.
Nothing.
Okay. That's what
Absolutely
I
nothing.
said. Nothing.
No, I took French for one semester in college as like a requirement for part of the degree. But before that, I lived in Italy for 2 years. And
Okay.
so when
Did
I lived
you?
there, I spoke, but now I don't
Okay.
because I
Hai
didn't need it.
dimenticato.
Like
You
if I'm
forgot.
around some people speaking it, then I'll get some words, I'll like remember some things. But like the underlying structure of the language, like the linguistic form, this stayed with me. So
Cool. You
I
can pick it
became
back up.
right. So like if I like in English teaching, then I would like start to recall things from Italian, and I so you know Italian root words, they would maybe be pronounced differently. Like, why does spaghetti have an H in it? And that kind of thing, you
Yeah,
know?
that's cool.
So those kinds of things. And then, like, I just went to Portugal and all those Italian pronunciation rules came back as I'm trying to navigate what's happening around me. And so they're saying, oh, this is pronounced like this before E, before I. I'm like, oh, I know this rule.
Cool. That's cool. Yeah. I think the most similar are Portuguese and Spanish, in my opinion. Yeah, but Italian has some in like crossover too with certain words and grammatical structure as well.
It's so cool how they're all connected. And you know, while you were talking about this, I just thought of how like a lot of teachers don't think about the difference between English as a second language and English as a third or fourth or fifth language. And you've actually got that experience. Like I had Italian as my first real second language that I spoke, but I never reached adult fluency, you know, so it was easy to lose. Russian, I'm like, I know what's happening there, so
Nice.
I can do
That's
that.
awesome.
So like learning it, for example, learning Russian as a third spoken language, then that second language foundation helped so much.
Totally. For me, I think I was thrown off again learning Turkish because there's no, like, I hadn't learned anything like this crazy language. And so I realized, like, it just takes so much more time. And so now I'm like, wow, like, languages that are so far from English just take a lot more time. And everyone wants to learn fast. You know, what is the fastest way I can learn English? And I'm like, sometimes, like, that isn't possible, especially. If I was in Turkey, which I went there for 3 months last year, I think you have that advantage because you're always around it. The signs are in Turkish, the people around you are Turkish, so you have that opportunity. But if you're learning it like I am now here, I have met some Turks, which is awesome. But for the most part, there are no Turkish people here, you know? So the process is just slower finding people online. And I've just realized, okay, this is slower. It's taking my brain. My brain wants to reject it because it's so different from all the languages I know that it can't make sense of it. Probably like Russian, you know? So I just.
And it's cool to then turn the tables and say, how do I, like, my students, what are they going through? Because I
Yes.
have students who are from Peru, Mexico, Venezuela, wherever, and they're learning, and there's a lot of similarities. There's some things that they just get automatically, whereas the Japanese student, the Thai student, the Vietnamese student, they're still like, what are you even talking about? And because it's a completely different language family, and then you go even to like the, it's not even in the Proto-European group of languages. So like Russian would actually be easier for you probably than Turkish,
Wow, that's an
because
interesting
it's
thought.
still like those Greek roots are there.
Yeah, and I see the same mistakes with my Turkish friends. You know, they always forget the article like a or the before the nouns because they don't have one. They don't say it. So I'm like, that's why you guys forget it, you know? So, yeah, or like they'll forget to say to before the food before the verb, you know, they'll forget to. I like to read because they don't say it in that way. So now I'm like, oh, and then now I see why I'm making the mistake in Turkish too. So it's cool. It's like nice to realize that.
And that's the and you see, that's a good teacher.
Thank you.
That's a good teacher. Like, a good teacher is supposed to be learning that stuff themselves, experiencing that stuff themselves, and then taking that real experience and then sharing that back with them. And the person who is resisting learning any other foreign language at all, who's just stuck in like, this is my English. My English, these are the rules, get away. Then they can't really get in there.
Yeah, that's
It's
true.
really cool that you're able to make those insights.
Thank you. Yeah, language learning is just so enriching. Like, I know not that many Americans learn, you know, another language, let alone five other ones, but I think it's so enriching. Like, I actually, the other day, it was yesterday, I told my husband, like, do you think I'm like wasting my time? Because I'm spending so much time studying Turkish, like a lot of time. And it's just because I enjoy it. You know, I don't really have like greater purpose in language learning, just for joy, for opening myself up to new cultures, learning new things, meeting new people. He's like, have you ever regretted like learning other languages? And I'm like, no, you're right. I haven't.
No, it's personal development, you know? It's personal growth. It's another skill that you get to turn up to a new level. Some people have, don't have, and then it comes in handy sometimes.
Yeah, and I'm lucky that I love it, that it's like a true passion and joy of mine, because if I wouldn't learn it if I didn't love it, I
Right?
don't
This is
think.
huge, especially for our students too, to create motivation for them. Like, I forget when it was, like 10 years ago or so. No, not 10. Yeah, maybe 10 years ago. I was saying, a teacher who can motivate the student is better than a teacher who can teach the student the content. So like, if you know all the grammar rules, all the pronunciation rules, if you know all of those rules, you're not as good of a teacher as that guy who can just make them smile. Like make them like it.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. If you can fall in love with the language you're learning, I think you're gonna be shocked. You're gonna be like, wow, like you're gonna go so much farther with that language.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Applying it to your real life and liking that process. But I think maybe we've tapped into something here, why a lot of Americans maybe don't like learning languages, because feel like if your parents are like a kind of against this idea, like that's something I don't understand, so I don't really want that around me, right? So if your parents shut down that idea when you're young, then you're at a huge disadvantage.
Yeah, that's true. That's
My
true.
house, we had little handbooks of like Italian and like Serbo-Croatian and Romanian, and I would just go and look at it like, ah.
That's cool. I come from a Finnish background, Finnish Swedish, so my great great grandparents. And unfortunately, my grandpa, who spoke fluently in Finnish, he never taught my dad. And so it wasn't passed down to us because back then it wasn't like cool coming in as an immigrant and not speaking English. So I think a lot of families lost that tradition of speaking the languages they came in with to their children. And so then I'm like, oh, Finnish is one of the hardest languages out there, Dad. Imagine if you taught me, you know?
It's very unique, its own
Yes.
family.
Yes.
But you just said something so cool.
It wasn't cool before for like immigrants for their kids to not speak English, but now it's so cool when somebody can speak a foreign language. You're like, wow.
You just making that statement, it was just like, yes, this is so true. And I think a lot of students need to hear that. Because just think of how many people you meet overseas who are afraid to speak English, are afraid that if they go to the United States, people aren't going to understand them, won't talk to them. People might not understand you, but people don't understand each other. Like
Yeah, it's
the
true.
neighbor, two neighbors don't understand. They speak two different languages. So like
Yeah.
you're just another one of those people who's just not speaking my language, but you're still like you're just like everybody else, right?
And now I think with borders, like people are immigrating everywhere. There's such a melting pot in every nation that it doesn't even matter anymore. I feel like if you don't be afraid to speak, yeah. I think that's our point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Camille, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Where can everybody find you? What's the best place?
So they can find me on Instagram with my name, Camille Hansen. And then they can find me on YouTube and TikTok, Learn English with Camille. They can find me on my website, learnenglishwithcamille.com. Where else am I? I think
And I saw
those
some
are.
freebies on there too. So
Yes,
everybody
I
who likes
do.
freebies.
Yeah, I do have offer a lot of free things as well because I know not everybody can afford to buy a new book or things like that. So, yes, go find me, guys.
Awesome. Yeah, go find Camille. We'll put all the links under the video or the podcast episode. It'll be in the description. So you can click, go find Camille and follow her too. Thank you so much
Thank
for your
you.
time.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. It was a lot of
Bye.
fun. Bye, guys.
Thank you for tuning in to English World with Chris Americos. Now it's your turn. Don't just listen to English, speak English with us every day. Join our English Everyday speaking program today. See you in the next episode. Bye bye.